Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. Pope Benedict XVI condemns organized crime and calls for greater solidarity in civil society. Helping a world in need, how Catholic Relief Services provides long-term support to the drought-ravaged nation of Ethiopia. A World Mountain Conference debates the role in mountains of green economy and institutional frameworks for sustainable development and poverty alleviation. And on this World Day Against the Death Penalty, Father Jim Brand reflects on the gift of life and on the horror of the death penalty. Pope Benedict XVI has condemned what he called ferocious organized crime groups in the south of Italy. The Pope's words came on Sunday during a one-day apostolic visit to the city of Lamezia Terme in the southern Calabria region. During his homily, Benedict also lamented high unemployment rates and urged residents to respond to the socio-economic ills affecting the region by caring for one another and for the common good. Emma McCarthy reports.
This Sunday, Pope Benedict XVI denounced what he described as a vicious criminality that wounds the social fabric of the Italian region of Calabria and called on Catholics there to take strength and courage from their faith, to overcome the obstacles of injustice, to care more for each other and the common good. The Holy Father was on a one-day pastoral visit to the Diocese of Lamezia Terme and Serra San Bruno, which lie in the heartland of the region, home to the infamous Ndrangheta Mafia. Calabria is Italy's southernmost region and one of its poorest and least developed, with an unemployment rate touching 27%. The setting for Sunday's Mass was particularly poignant: a disused plastics factory, one of the many empty warehouses in the industrial complex just outside town.
Non vogliamo essere una terra amara.
Welcoming Pope Benedict, Mayor Gianni Speranza spoke of a land of extraordinary potential and resources, but also of unacceptable unemployment and dramatic injustices and violence. He said, "We cannot allow the dominion of the mafia and organized crime to grow stronger, or healthy industries being swallowed up by illegality. Your presence," the mayor concluded, turning to Pope Benedict, "gives courage and a voice to all of those who so desperately need it."
Grazie ancora, Santità.
In his homily, Pope Benedict responded,
"Non cedete mai alla tentazione del pessimismo e del ripiegamento su voi stessi."
He said, "Never give in to the temptations of pessimism and retreat in on yourselves. Rely on the resources of your faith and your human capacities. Strive to grow in the ability to collaborate, to take care of each other and the public good."
Custodite l'abito nuziale dell'amore.
He continued, "If we observe this beautiful region, we recognize it as a seismic land, not only from the geological point of view, but also from a structural, behavioral, and social standpoint. A land that seems to live in a state of constant emergency."
Desidero anche incoraggiare e benedire gli sforzi di quanti.
And then he told the people of that land, "Do not be afraid to live and witness the faith in various sectors of society. You have every reason to show yourselves strong, confident, and courageous, and this by the light of the faith and the power of love. And when you encounter the opposition of the world, make your own the words of the Apostle Paul: I can do all things in him who strengthens me." I'm Emma McCarthy.
Thanks there to Emma McCarthy for that report. And Pope Benedict XVI's reiterated appeal for aid to the Horn of Africa, where millions are facing famine, drought and violence, once again highlights the need for the international community to continue its commitment to reach out to the suffering people. With the logo "Giving Hope to a World of Need," since 1958, Catholic Relief Services, With funding from church and UN organisations, as well as from donations from concerned individuals of goodwill, has helped fight the effects of recurrent drought in Ethiopia. In the throes of this year's terrible drought in the Horn of Africa, Ethiopians remember keenly the devastating drought and famine in 1984 and the more recent one in 2000. The numerous pastoralist communities in Ethiopia know that lack of access to water will kill their livestock and destroy the very fabric of their culture. However, aid workers in the country reveal that some 95% of the wells drilled in the past are still operational and are still, if insufficiently, serving many communities. I spoke to Lane Bunkers, for the past 4 years, the country representative for the CRS program in Ethiopia. He explains how, working side by side with the government and local partners, CRS helps Ethiopians cope in the face of emergencies and build the foundations needed to ultimately improve their resilience in the face of changing rain patterns and rising food costs. I was looking on the internet. I see you have received tokens of appreciation from the church representatives there. Do you work closely with the Catholic Church?
Yes, we do. Ethiopia has a long history of working closely with the Ethiopian Catholic Church. The way that we implement our activities in Ethiopia is through local partners. And the majority of our partners in Ethiopia are affiliated with the Catholic Church.
Right now, the Horn of Africa is undergoing an extreme humanitarian crisis. Could you describe to me what the situation is in your region at the moment?
The situation in Ethiopia has gotten worse in the last couple of months. Some of the reasons for this emergency would be climate change and the fragility of the Ethiopian agricultural system, which relies on rain-fed crops. There are two distinct growing seasons in Ethiopia. And in recent years, due to climate change and shifting weather patterns, the rains have been erratic and unpredictable. For example, this year, the short rains were delayed and much shorter in duration. Currently, the long rains are coming to their end, so we're hopeful that on the horizon, when the crops are harvested in the coming months, we'll have a much better situation. But it's not only the weather that has affected Ethiopia this time around. Rising food costs have also had an impact in Ethiopia. People are unable to buy the amounts or the quality of food that they have been able to purchase previously. Just the price of wheat alone has increased nearly 85% than last year at this time. So in times such as this, CRS and other organizations provide humanitarian support in the form of food distribution, nutrition assistance to those who need it, and also agricultural inputs for rural communities so that they can have the tools and seeds to regain their economic livelihood.
So who exactly are you reaching out to at the moment? Who would you say the people most affected by the current situation are?
Catholic Relief Service's community-based development programming centers itself in rural communities. 85% of Ethiopians earn their economic livelihood via agricultural activities. So the majority of our development programming is concentrated in the rural areas. So at this time, it's clearly two different groups that have been affected. One would be those groups that rely on agricultural practice for their livelihood. And then the other group that's affected by this would be the pastoralist groups. Those are the communities which follow their herds for either pasture or access to water. So there's two different groups that are being affected most at this time.
Other countries in the Horn of Africa are seeing the mass exoduses of refugees searching for basic needs. Is this happening in Ethiopia at all?
No. Unfortunately, this country is accustomed to these kind of droughts, these kinds of shocks, as we often refer to them. So there are many different warning systems and other response systems in place. So it's not common for the Ethiopians to cross into another country in seek of shelter, as we're seeing now with the Somalis. There are networks that are well-developed and systems in place to respond to the Ethiopian communities that find themselves suffering at this time.
Now, you describe CRS as a partner of the Ethiopian Catholic Church. How exactly do you interact with the Catholic Church?
As an organization, we do not do direct implementation in Ethiopia. we implement through local partner organizations, and those in Ethiopia are predominantly Catholic Church organizations. It may be a social service agency that is sponsored by the diocese. It could be a community of religious, such as priests or nuns. We are also supporting the National Caritas, which is known here as the Ethiopian Catholic Secretariat, in their coordination and implementation of the international appeal that has been released to the Caritas Internationalis members. So we work really at two different levels. One would be at the national coordinating level, and then at the more local implementational level as well.
And what about the government in Ethiopia? Does it support your work? Does it help you?
The government of Ethiopia is very appreciative of the work that the Universal Catholic Church is doing here, not only CRS. We have long been a humanitarian partner of theirs. So we do not receive financial support from the Ethiopian government. However, we do coordinate very closely with them in all of our humanitarian and our development programming.
You do receive financial support from the Caritas Network, am I correct?
Yes. CRS is the international agency charged with development and humanitarian assistance of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. So CRS receives its private funding from the United States bishops, and we are a member of the Caritas Internationalis networks. So at times like these, when we issue an appeal, it goes out to all the Caritas Internationalis members who make their donations and their pledges to the International Appeal for Ethiopia, and then that comes to Ethiopia and is administered by the local Catholic Church here in Ethiopia.
That means that each and every one of us can actually take part by responding to that appeal. Would you like to make that appeal to our listeners as well?
Certainly. We are a universal church, and those of us who are present in Ethiopia are responding in a very compassionate and responsible manner. So if one is able to commit resources to this appeal, that would be great. Those resources are needed. But the second aspect of this is also to inform and educate people about what is going on in Ethiopia and the root causes of this, which will hopefully provoke an act of solidarity or advocacy.
Do you feel at times that maybe the international community doesn't really take much notice?
It's difficult in Ethiopia because this is recurrent. In fact, the current food emergency that we have underway at present was originally declared in 2008 when the government went out with its first international appeal for humanitarian assistance. So I think there is some fatigue on the part of people in the West when they hear about yet another drought or another famine that's affecting Ethiopia and now this year, the larger Horn of Africa. That's understandable, but it also behooves all of us to learn more about what's causing this and to see what else we can do to bring about a change so that we can break this cycle.
Lane, what are your hopes for the near future?
Well, in Ethiopia, it's the unpredictability of droughts that require all humanitarian agencies to be prepared to respond and also to think about mitigative efforts that would somehow sustain us in the long term. You know, our CRS development programs have greatly helped communities to resist the kinds of shocks that this country is now experiencing. So I'm hopeful that we'll be able to continue to concentrate on those longer-term development issues while at the same time being able to provide the humanitarian support to relieve the suffering of so many at this time.
It must be quite tough to be out there and witness the suffering of so many people, so many children in particular. What are your rewards, can we say?
My rewards come in the form of people being well-informed and people having a basic knowledge of why we find ourselves in this situation in Ethiopia. When one takes on a career based on providing humanitarian programming, I think you have to be prepared and have a fairly strong ability to tolerate this kind of suffering that we see so regularly. And in Ethiopia, it's become, unfortunately, you know, this country seems to just go from one emergency to another, from one drought to another. So it's something that I hope that we haven't all become desensitized to, but I think that we have been able to get beyond the emotional aspect of it somewhat and are really able to use our skills as professionals and people of service to bring about some lasting solutions, or at least to attempt to bring about some lasting solutions.
Thank you very much, Lane. Is there anything else you would like to add to that?
No, I would just like to say thank you to all those who have contributed to the Caritas Internationalis appeal or to other organizations that are responding to the drought here in Ethiopia and into the Horn of Africa. And please continue to support us with whatever donations you have and with your thoughts and prayers.
Around 150 international experts are set to attend a conference on mountains this week. The questions to be discussed include issues such as how globalization and climate change are affecting the lives of those living in mountainous regions. What effect are they having on migration, urbanization, and food security? Yes, the issues are basic and affect us all. That's why the Lucerne World Mountain Conference, which starts on Tuesday the 11th, will provide an important forum to discuss the results achieved so far and the opportunities and challenges in the global development of mountain areas. As Lydia O'Kane discovered, there will be presentations and discussions on regional and global experiences in mountain development since the Rio Environment Conference of 1992. The results of the conference will feed into a number of initiatives and events, such as the UN Sustainability Conference Rio 20, which will take place next year. Lydia spoke to Mr. Olman Serrano, coordinator of the Mountain Partnership Secretariat and senior forestry officer at the FAO Forestry Department.
Perhaps you could start by talking to us about what the aims are of this conference.
The main objective of the conference is to raise awareness worldwide about the importance that mountains carry in the international agenda, particularly right now that there are heavy preparations for the Rio meeting, the Rio Plus 20 meeting, which is following the Earth Summit in 1992. So it's going to be next year in June in Rio, and mountain ecosystem must remain in the agenda.
I mean, how far have we come from Rio 1992 to this point?
There was a long way of not only negotiations, but also a range of activities, particularly related to mountains, because in Rio we had the Agenda 21 that was agreed upon, and among the Agenda 21 there is Chapter 13, and Chapter 13 is related to mountain development. Now, this was already in 1992. Afterwards, 10 years later, that was the Earth Summit in Johannesburg in 2002, where mountains still remain in the agenda, and where the Mountain Partnership, where the one that I'm coordinating now, was created almost 10 years ago. So it's been quite a bit of intensive discussions, but also on the groundwork through the different members of the partnership.
Are there key challenges that you want to highlight at this conference? And if there are, could you talk to us about those?
The conference is, so to say, limited to the Rio Plus 20 preparation, the Lucerne Conference. And the Rio Plus 20 in itself has two main subjects. One is the green economy, and the other one is institutional governance. And this is why we're concentrating those subjects related to mountains on the green economy, meaning what can mountains do for green economy, or the other way around, how can green economy help development of mountain ecosystems and people living in the mountains?
And what exactly can a green economy do for people and for sustainability?
Green economy is actually the key for sustainability, because we're talking about low carbon economy, we're talking about better use of natural resources, and of course, if we talk about green economy, mountain development, we're talking about water resources that are, of course, quite important for humanity in general. But we're talking about other issues like even agriculture, so green economy in agriculture. So in this, we have family agriculture, which is quite important. And there is another initiative that is called Greening the Economy with Agriculture. So agriculture in mountain regions is very important, and of course, looking at from the green aspect will help a lot on developing those communities living in mountains.
With regard to people living in mountainous areas, have we seen a decrease or an increase in people living in mountainous areas?
Well, there is still quite a population, but of course you mentioned a very important point, which is migration. Migration is actually one of the challenges that mountain communities are facing. Because it's not necessarily a family migrating, but in many cases is the head of the family migrating to the cities to look for a job. So leaving the families behind, women that have to take care of the whole family, that have to take care of the farm, of the agriculture activities. So it is a real challenge for people, and this is why it's so important to get some more development activities in the mountain regions itself so that family can stay together and migration can be stopped.
We hear a lot more in the news about things like rainforests than we do about mountains. It's one of the subjects that comes up less. But with regards to mountains, regarding climate change, are we looking at mountain erosion? Are we looking at things like that that are affecting mountains?
Absolutely. Climate change is affecting mountains in many, many ways. If you just think about glaciers, melting glaciers is one of the most important issues of concern to scientists and also politicians, because the glaciers are actually the water towers of the world. And if the glaciers are melting in the way they're doing right now, in a few years' time, it's going to be an extreme water crisis worldwide.
Today, October the 10th, is the day we mark the 9th World Day against the death penalty. Since 2003, abolitionists have taken actions all over the world, every 10th of October, to raise awareness and opposition to the death penalty. And as always, to mark this day, hundreds of events have been organised across the globe. For Vatican Radio, Father Jim Brand reflects on the gift of life and on the horror of the death penalty.
Hello, it's Father Jim again. I've been making some noises about God's spirit, God's inner life that's been revealed to us. And we use the word light and life, two very important things, not only for people to live, but to live life to the full. If we look at the sun and realize all life somehow is affected by the sun. Whether life came from outside the solar system, I wouldn't know. It's a very interesting subject. But at the moment, if there was terrific volcanic eruptions and the sun was darkened, life would diminish, if not perish. Our Lord wanted us to have life to the full. And we can only begin being really happy if we know that we're all of us sent by God. There was a man sent by a God whose name was John. There's a lady sent by a God whose name is Janice. Each one of us is a little messenger sent into this world by God. And we've been sent to decorate the world first. Anyone would think we were just sent to penal servitude. We tend to put a great emphasis on people's doings or failure to do. Even the I confess is Martha going to confession, not Mary. Do you remember the two sisters? What I've done and what I've failed to do. Before what we do, we have to think about who we are. If a tree isn't producing fruit, don't paint the apples that are there. Care for the tree and the fruit will shift for itself. And the fact that we're princes and princesses in the kingdom means that everything we do or don't do is done by a prince or princess. And people need encouraging not just to improve their behaviour, but to have a wonderful idea of who they are. In God's eyes, you are my son, you are my daughter, in whom I'm well pleased. And then our doings will shift for themselves. Before God ever did, if you believe the Big Bang theory of 14,000 million years ago, God is. I am. And for us to be able to say, by God's grace, I am. Because lilies and daisies don't get nervous breakdowns. They don't worry about the rent, they just bloom. And before we do anything, let's just bloom and live. Let's enjoy each moment that we've been given as a gift. I suppose killing people is so against everything we stand for. It would even include, in my opinion, the death penalty. As opposed to the idea of life and living life to the full, I'm going to share this poem by Rudyard Kipling. It's rather vicious. But what this poem describes is still going on in many countries of the world. And people turn up to cheer, if you please, and abuse the person being killed with a sense of vindictiveness, as if God loves punishment. Our God loves redemption. And the death penalty is the final stop to any chance of redemption in this life. It's called Danny Deva. I warn you, it's rather vicious. "What are the bugles blowing for?" said Files on Parade. "To turn you out, to turn you out," the colour sergeant said. "What makes you look so white," said Files on Parade. "I'm dreading what I got to watch," the colour sergeant said, "for they're hanging Danny Deva. You can hear the dead march play, the regiments in Olive Square, they're hanging him today. They've taken of his buttons off and cut his stripes away, and they're hanging Danny Deva in the morning." "What makes the rear rank breathe so hard?" said Files on Parade. "It's bitter cold, it's bitter cold," the colour sergeant said. "What makes that front rank man fall down?" said Files on Parade. A touch of sun," the colour sergeant said. "Hanging Danny Deva, they're marching of him around. They've altered Danny Deva by his coffee on the ground, and he'll swing in half a minute for a sneaking shooting hound. Oh, they're hanging Danny Deva in the morning." "Iscott was right, and Cott to mine," said Files on Parade. "He's sleeping out and far tonight," the colour sergeant said. "I've drunk his beer a score of times," said Files on Parade. "He's drinking bitter beer alone," the colour sergeant said. "And they're hanging Danny Deva. You must mark him to his place, for he shot a comrade sleeping. You mustn't look him in the face. 900 of his country and the regiment's disgrace while they're hanging Danny Deva in the morning." "What's that so black agin the sun?" said Files on Parade. "It's Danny fighting hard for life," the colour sergeant said. "What's that that whimpers overhead?" said Files on Parade. "It's Danny's soul that's passing now," the colour sergeant said. For they're done with Danny Deva. You can hear the quick step play. The regiment's in column and they're marching us away. Ha! The young recruits are shaking, and they'll want their beer today after hanging Danny Deva in the morning. Calvary is repeated throughout the world, every day of the week. Amen.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at the same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can also listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.